Today, we're going to finish what we started probably a little over a month ago. We've been studying out the letters that Paul wrote while he was in prison. And again, with what we are experiencing now, while in no way should we want to make a direct apples-to-apples parallel between what we're experiencing as we shelter in place and we stay in our homes. But it's interesting because there are some parallels that we can extract from what it was that Paul was experiencing, that he wasn't able to be able to just get out and do what he wanted to do. He was on what we would consider house arrest. He had to stay in place. And this went on for 2 to 2.5 years. But during that time, Paul did not lose sight of the fact that even though he wasn't able to go out as a missionary, even though he wasn't able to go out and spread the gospel to these new places where people had not yet heard about Christ, he understood that he still had a responsibility as a man of God called to do the work of an evangelist. He understood that he still had a responsibility. And so he carried that out by writing these letters. And we looked at Philippians last week. We looked at Philemon and the heart that went into that. Today, we're going to finish by looking in the book of Colossians. Now, Colossians was a little bit different than the other letters and some of the other work that you'll find that Paul was either directly or had his hands involved in. He was responsible for. But the church, the Colossian church there, actually, this place was called Colossae, I believe is how it's pronounced. But he had actually never visited these people. He did not know them. He actually did not have a relationship with them. Yet, even though he didn't know them, even though he didn't have a personal relationship with them, you know, you might just think, well, you know, until I get there, it's really none of my business what goes on there. I'll just wait until I show up and wait until I find out. But Paul did not take that attitude. He said, even though I don't know these people and I've not personally met them, I did not establish this congregation in Colossae, I'm going to myself take it upon myself to offer and interject some very important things. Why? Because it matters. Even though he did not know them, it still mattered. I think about that all the time when I'm out, and less so now because people are so cautious. I mean, I actually was at Sam's, I think it was last Monday or Tuesday, and there was a lady who, you know how Sam's is, you don't have bags, so people sometimes they don't want to take the car, they just carry stuff. I'm the worst for this. I do this at Aldi all the time. Sometimes I cheat and I give them 7 cents and I just take the paper bag. But a lot of times I'm walking through Aldi or Sam's and I'm just trying to carry everything because I'm just like, you're not getting my, you know, 10 cents for a bag today. And I didn't bring my recycle. My wife, she has them in the back of her trunk and she keeps them in the car. I don't. And so if I can't find a box, then I'm kind of stuck. Well, anyway, this lady's in Sam's and she's, you know, carrying all this stuff and something slipped and it dropped. And my instinct, something I've been taught through my whole life is, you know, go help the lady out. You don't have to know them. It doesn't have to be your mom or auntie or somebody. You can go help the lady out. And as I'm approaching, I'm thinking, oh, how's this going to be received? I'm not going to be 6 feet away. And she just kind of looked over at me. And I couldn't, you know, you can't see but anybody's eyes anymore because everybody's wearing a mask. We're going to get into that in just a second. But she kind of looks over at me, and I could tell just by the look, she kind of gave me one of those eyebrow things like, I don't know, it was like, no, thank you. I'll just struggle to get, you know, everything up to the counter. I'll kick it or something. Like, the point is, we still have this thing where even if I don't know you, I want to help. I was in the parking lot. I went to go pick up a pizza last night for the kids. And I ate a slice, yes. But I went to go pick up this pizza for the kids. And there was a lady in the parking lot, way off, okay, this is down here in Camden by Walmart, this was Domino's. this lady in the parking lot, and I hear this scream, and I look to see what it is. Not just being nosy. I look because I'm thinking, does she need help? Now, maybe, and it was a long, it seemed like it'd take a lot longer, but it's probably about 5 or 6 seconds later, she starts laughing, and then I hear this other man start laughing. Clearly, they're having fun. They're just glad to be out of the house. But immediately, I'm thinking, do I need to get involved? Do I need to call 911? Do I need to go, like, is she hurt? Even though we do not necessarily know an individual or a person, even if we're not directly involved, it does not keep us from wanting, just as human beings, just as good people, it doesn't keep us from wanting to actually be involved. It doesn't keep us from wanting to intervene. And I say this because, and the reason why this is so important is because when we think about our relationship with God, when we think about how it is that we are to engage and interact with one another, what's so important is that, especially during this time, that we don't take the attitude that says, you know what, I don't really know this situation, I don't really know what's going on, and it's not really my concern, and that's not my family. Those aren't people that I've built a relationship with. I'm still going to get involved. That was the attitude that Paul took. And what we're going to see here as we look through just a few different verses here in Colossians is not only did he take that attitude, but he reminded them of what was important. One of the things that's happening, and I'm seeing it so much online, I'm seeing it, and just people calling me and texting me and they're asking me questions. And did you hear about this? Well, did you see what this said? Did you read this quote? Did you read this interview? Did you hear about this thing? And there's all these conspiracies, all these, you know, notions that people have about something nefarious going on. And it's like, well, yeah, that could be true, but maybe this is just a virus. No, I heard something else. You know, I heard this has to do with, you know, the Catholic Church is trying to take over, and I heard that this has to do with, there's literally all these types of things. And one of the things that Paul is going to, we're going to see here that he's reminding them is that there are things that are important in life. There are things about your walk with God that are very important. And we need to focus on those things and not allow ourselves to get distracted. The title that I've given the lesson today is Diversion Tactics. Sometimes Satan doesn't just come at you and try to steal you away directly. Sometimes it's a diversion. It's a little deception. It's a little bit of, you know, sleight of hand. He's playing a shell game with us. He wants us to get off track instead of really focusing on what's important about who Jesus is and what he has called us to do, regardless of the situation that we're currently in. With the obvious theme that is in everybody's life all over the world right now, this virus, I noticed this yesterday. The governor requires that Delawareans must wear face coverings in public settings. Now, in fairness, there were, you know, qualifications, and you need to understand this. What he's essentially saying is that if you're going to go out in public, if you're going to go to the grocery store, whatever it is, if you're going to be here, then in order to be in compliance, 6 feet is not enough. You need to also have a facial covering. He says if you have children who are 2 years old or younger, you are not permitted. You are actually prohibited from putting facial coverings on them. And the reason why is because kids that are that little, there is a choke hazard, like a suffocation thing, I guess. I don't know. I don't have any children who are 2 years old. And I'm not going to walk up to somebody and say, how old is your child? They don't look two to me, you know. The point is that this is done not necessarily so that, you know, we can put just more stipulations on everything, but it is to keep the spread of this virus down. I thought it interesting, though, because one of the things that's been happening is with all the facial coverings out there, you have people who are, it's actually kind of become a bit of an industry. I have a good friend of mine who she has actually been sewing these, you know, things and putting them together. And what so many people fail to realize is that the facial coverings actually, they really don't protect you. They're actually designed for you to not give it to someone else. So if you're an asymptomatic carrier of this thing, or if you have it and it may be laying dormant, but you can still spread it. So the idea is that you don't give it to somebody else. It's not really protecting you. You would actually have to have one of those N95 masks and then have one of those over it, but it would kind of just be for fashion at that point, which is kind of interesting because, you know, there's a right way to do things and there's a wrong way to do it. These masks have a purpose, but what's kind of sort of getting lost in all the craze about these masks is that people are kind of forgetting the reason why you're supposed to have them. I want to look in Colossians chapter 2 because one of the things we're going to find is Paul is addressing them on something that we can relate to. Understanding what's important. What's important is not the mask that we put on. Again, understand that the masks themselves have a purpose. Just like certain things that we're required to do and asked to do have a purpose. And other things are kind of a distraction. I'll start in verse 16 in chapter 2. He says, therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food and drink, or with regard to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath. These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. Let no one disqualify you, insisting on asceticism and worship of angels, going on in detail about visions, puffed up without reason by his sensuous mind, and not holding fast to the head, from whom the whole body, nourished and knit together through its joints and ligaments, grows with the growth that is from God. If with Christ you died to the elemental spirits of the world, why, as if you were still alive in the world, do you submit to regulations? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, referring to things that all perish as they are used, according to human precepts and teachings. These have indeed an appearance of wisdom in promoting self-made religion and asceticism and severity to the body, but they are of no value in stopping the indulgence of the flesh. Paul's making a very clear point here. He's saying, when he says stopping the indulgence of the flesh, he's saying all these things that's going on and people are telling you and all these people that are adding these different, you know, rules and regulations to your worship and how you're to live, those things may seem to matter, but in the end, they have nothing to do with you having a more righteous life, with you getting rid of sin, with you being able to live more like Christ. These things don't matter. You know, Linda, I'll share this. She's here. So Linda, she, and by the way, you guys can't see it. I won't turn the camera around. Linda is in full compliance. Okay. She has on her N95 mask. But Linda, she said, she called me, this was a couple weeks ago, she said, hey, I got some masks, you want some masks? I said, yeah, I want some masks. And she said, what kind do you want? And she said, one of them's got these bones on it, and the other one's blue, and then this one. And I was like, you know. And so I decided, and then she just managed to drop off quite a few of them, and I just took them off. Now, the thing about it is that these masks that she offered, she, because she is actually an essential worker, she works in a facility where she is required to be there. She can't, and her coworkers can't just decide, you know what, we're not coming to work. Because of where she works, she has to go. She actually manages people who are in a facility where they're locked down. So what happens is she has these masks. Now, I was grateful, but again, it's important to understand what these masks are for. Like I said, I went and I read about these masks. She wasn't offering me these masks as life-saving cures, and you can just go out here and do whatever you want to do. It was understood. This is to protect others from what you might be giving. What Paul is pointing out to them, there are people for their own reasons. And to give some context here, in this particular congregation, he's talking about man or men. He doesn't know these people, but he's heard what's going on. He's saying, don't let these men come in here and try to sell you something or try to get you, as we say, upcharge and try to get you to get caught up in the bells and whistles and, oh, you need a mask with the nice, pretty design on it or get one with your name on. He said, no, don't let them get you off focus. What matters, and he's talking about touching and don't eat. See, what happens is there were a lot of rituals and a lot of traditions that for many years people carried these things out. And they considered those things in a very devout way. And those things are what mattered. He said, no, what actually matters is not these perishable things. What actually matters is not, so like if you know you think about when you show up for church, what matters is not that you have a tie on or that you wore your Sunday shoes or that you sat in a particular seat. Those things don't make a difference. What time we start service or you know, if we have it at, you know, this particular building, if we have church or home, these are things that are, quite frankly, very ancillary. They're very outside of what actually matters. That's why I'm making a comparison with those masks. The masks matter for how they protect you and how they protect others. The fashion, the aesthetics. He talks about aestheticism. Because very often as Christians, we forget how we look, how we may appear, how we may come across to others on the surface matters far less than our hearts and how we're actually behaving and treating one another. And there are people who right now, they're telling people, you know, to get caught up in this and be thinking about this. And we can get so caught up in conspiracy theories and ideas and you know, the politics that are involved. And, well, you know what, I don't like the way that Donald Trump handled this, and I think that this would be better. And these types of things really don't matter for us who are believers. It may matter when you go to vote, and you may have an opinion, but when it comes to our faith, when it comes to people being able to know that Christ died for them to be forgiven, these things really don't matter. And we need to focus on these things because right now Satan is trying to give us the shell game. He's trying to distract us. He's trying to, you know, we got all this time to just sit around and watch the news, read things on Facebook. You know, you're getting off early because all you got to do is log out. You don't have to do the drive home, the commute. So now what are you doing? You're reading all these different things. It's important that we as Christians focus on what matters. And what matters is that this is a time when we shouldn't be distracted with all of the things, details, what everybody else is caught up on. We should be focused on that which actually can save us and give us eternal life. What really matters is our sincerity at a heart level rather than the appearance that we have on the surface level. If there's nothing else we're learning at this time, is that how we look, how we appear, the aura that we're giving off, that really matters far less than what's going on in your heart. Because guess what? Nobody can see it anymore. Nobody can see how you're living in your home. Nobody can see what's actually going on because you're not visible to anyone. Paul was an invisible, no-face guy who people in this congregation had just heard of. But he was still able to have an impact because of what his heart led him to do. He gave substance. He cared. Do we care enough to let our heart show, even though on the outside, nobody knows what's going on? See, if you're in your home, if you're not able to get out, you're not one of those essential workers that you have to go to work every day. If you're somebody who's at home, see, we can't see you put a good face on, you know, put your mask on. We can't see it. Nobody can see it. So if you're in fear, if you're in doubt, if you're angry, if you're bitter, if you're scared, if you're lonely, if you're sad, whatever's going on, these are the things that we have to remember to deal with and go to God and allow our brothers and sisters to help us with, because nobody can see what's on the outside. Our piety, how well we dressed, did Bill iron his shirt today? You can't see it. You may think you can, but you can't see it because I have a jacket on. That's why I wore the jacket. Well, that's one of the reasons why I wore the jacket. And I did press my shirt. But the point is, you can't see these things from all the way where you are. But you will know based on our interactions. You will know based on us being prayer partners. You will know based on how I'm willing to give and sacrifice if I'm truly living my life for God on a heart level versus just doing something for show for the camera. This was interesting, too. I found this. I didn't even know this existed, but 211. True story, I've never heard of 211. But apparently you can get all types of information there. There's even one for those who are deaf and hard of hearing, 711. I don't even know how that works because I don't know how those phones work, that level of communication. But you can get updates specifically about the coronavirus. One of the things I found interesting is with Governor Carney coming out with these different steps and rules that he wants people to follow, including a required face mask that you have to wear if you're going to go out in public. He gave a bunch of different things. And rules are very interesting because you have some people that think rules will keep me in compliance and keep me, you know, right according to the law. And you have other people who feel like, well, you know, all rules are meant to be broken at one point or another, right? Rules are those kind of things where people a lot of times leave them up into, you know, interpretation. I found it interesting. I saw this. It says three simple rules. If you do not go after what you want, you'll never have it. If you do not ask, the answer will always be no. If you do not step forward, you'll always be in the same place. You know, when we think about our relationship with God and what we're experiencing right now, what's very important for us to understand is that there are things that matter and there's things that don't. Again, right now could be a time where we could be living in fear and we could be, you know, uncertain of our future, or it could be a time for us to really experience the power of God in a very personal way without any distractions. Could be moving forward in our faith. God could be trying to reveal something to you that actually requires you to be at home a whole lot more than you normally would have been. But are we moving forward in that way, or is our idea of progress and moving forward and growing closer to Him defined by things that are external and therefore we can't even see the things that are going on in the heart? You know, I talked about those masks and I told you there's like a whole like cottage industry now. Like this lady has flowers. Flowers on the outside of her mask, and that's fine. She decorated them and it I guess that's pretty for people who like flowers and that kind of thing. I found this other one. This lady's in a full hazmat suit. She's got the, you know, the shield. She looked like she's about to go to like a like steel mill or something. Like I don't know what that is. But people all over the world, they're wearing these masks, and while they may be cute, while they may look aesthetically pleasing, are they actually that much more beneficial? This one I thought was particularly interesting because they didn't just stop at the mask. Like, they've got the whole outfit going on with it. I don't even know what's underneath that lady's scarf. But I'm seeing this now. People are thinking, well, if this is going to be the new normal and I've got to wear these masks to protect myself and other people, I may as well look good doing it. It may as well match my jacket. You know, I'm going to be wearing this thing. You know, the thing about it is, and I go back to the original question, how much do we care about how we look as Christians versus what's actually underneath it all? How much does it matter? Because I know some people, frankly, I've talked to them, and I was like, you're not serious. Right? Like, yeah. They've literally told me, man, I'm not wearing that mask. It's difficult. I don't think it looks particularly good. It looks terrible. I'm tired of seeing people walking around here looking like G.I. Joe. Remember Cobra? You know, like, I'm tired of this, you know. Or it's difficult for me to breathe. And I'm like, well, just when it gets tough, just take it off and breathe a little bit and put it back on. Well, no, I'm not going to do that. What really matters to us, is it our appearance? Is it the aesthetics? Is it how it feels? Or does what really matter come from the heart? This one I thought was almost disturbing, especially since I don't think animals are at any particular risk for the disease. But this lady, she went so far as to get her dog a mask. And you think about it, I'm not judging the woman. I don't know what her reasons are. I don't even know that this is her dog. She might just be a model. But think about how far we go for things that, frankly, are not important. There are people out here who don't have masks, who actually don't have, they can't go out safely because they don't have masks. But they're, you know, we'll invest our money instead of taking some money and investing in getting, you know, safety things for people who need them. We'll do things for our dolls. We'll do things for our car. We'll spend all of our time doing things that are aesthetically pleasing, things that please us, things for ourselves, rather than things that are beneficial in the long term for God and the work that we need to do for him. Let's look in chapter 3 of Colossians, starting in verse 1. If then you have been raised with Christ, seek things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. In these you too once walked when you were living in them. But now you must put them all away. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Here, there is not Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is all and in all. Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgive each other. As the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And we'll stop right there. He's making a very clear point here, saying that in order for us to truly live in a way that's pleasing to God, that we have to put away our sinful nature, that we have to put away the desires of this world, that we have to focus on those things that matter, that all these other things, all these other mysteries, all these other concepts and ideas and things that the world is fixated on, that we know where our faith lies and our focus is on Christ. Is that something that we are doing in this time? Because for some people, in order to focus, it'd be different. I'll tell you a quick story. My uncle, one time, I think I was about 20 years old, and I'm talking about, I was helping my uncle move, and we're in the car, and at this time, I was very angry with my dad. I don't think I remember what I was angry about, but I was very angry with my father. And whatever it was about, I'm going along, and my uncle, he's just kind of, and my uncle, this is my dad's brother, he's only a year younger than him, and we're just talking, and we're riding along in this moving van, and you know, my uncle kind of smirked, and I'm like, it's not funny. And he's like, yeah, it actually kind of is. And I said, well, what's funny about this? I'm really upset. I am torn up about this. He said, because your father does the same thing. I've been watching him your entire life. Your father does the same thing every single time. And I said, what is that? He said, there are plenty of times when you're winning the argument. There are a whole lot of times when you are 100% right. But your father always knows how to get you off track. He always knows how to distract you. All he has to do is make you just a little bit upset. All he has to do is bring up something just to make you a little bit upset, and you will totally lose sight of what was really going on, what was substantive. And then you get mad. And then you become the person who's irate, and then you become unreasonable. And then you get unwound, and then you get unglued and unwrapped. And suddenly, instead of actually getting to the point, instead of actually getting some ground, instead of actually making some headway in the situation that you all are at odds with, now you're angry and he's off the hook. Now, my dad probably still tries to use this tactic all these years later. And I'll be honest, I don't know that it's working that much. It may be. But I remember him vividly telling me that, and it completely changed my outlook, not on just my relationship with my dad. My dad's actually not a very argumentative guy, but, you know how it is. When you're combative, it's like you start losing. It's like, hey, I'm not going to let my son beat me, so I'll distract him. And here's the thing. That's exactly what Paul is trying to tell the church here. You're growing. I'm hearing great things about you. You're handling persecution well. You're handling the teachings well. You are becoming more mature in Christ. But sin is not only something that's corrosive to your soul, to your spirit. It is not only something that takes away and is toxic and it allows you to be less like Christ, but it is most often a distraction. One of the things that happens is, especially during times like this, when we are maybe making less money, when we are struggling because we've got so much more on our plate. One of the things my wife and I have been talking often about is how much I love being home with my wife and my children all the time, all day long. But how much I also get frustrated that I am home with my wife and children all day long, all the time. It's so important, and I've even gotten to the point where I've compartmentalize, like I'm like, I need a break, but I can't just like leave, because if I just leave and go for a walk or whatever for an hour, then that leaves my wife at home with both of them, and then I'm afraid for the children. So what I'll do is sometimes I'll split it up, and I'll take William with me, and I'll leave Kendall. Most of the times I take Kendall because she's the one where there's gonna be a fire when I come back, right? And you know, they'll be going at it. The point is that as much as this time has been beneficial, it's important that we don't allow ourselves to get distracted and allow the things on the inside, our bitterness, our resentment, our hurts. This is a time when we should be healing, not just avoiding getting sick. Spiritually, we should be healing. We should be taking this time. As I talked about a couple weeks ago, our marriages, we've got plenty of time to talk it out. There are things that we need to address and deal with. We need to do it. Get rid of that malice. Get rid of that anger. Get rid of that mistrust. Get rid of that hurt. Even if it's something from way back in the past that's lingering. Do not allow ourselves to get distracted. Because Satan's like, okay, I can't get them to go out in the world and let some stranger do it. So maybe now I'm going to use the people that live in their house to cause this bitterness, to cause this anger, to cause this rage, to cause this resentment. Our status doesn't make us more acceptable to God. It's the Christ in us, however, that does. Our status and, you know, our stature and what the world thinks about us doesn't really matter if in our hearts and in our homes and in the relationships that are closest to us, we can't show the example of Christ. He's trying to compel them and urge them to remember that you have to let things go. He points out, he says, to forgive those. If you got a grievance, if you got something, this is a time for us to heal. This is a time for us to let it go. This is a time for us to forgive. This is a time for us, if we can, cancel those debts. Don't hold it against people anymore. I'm not just talking financial debts. I'm saying if you feel like somebody owes you an apology, you feel like somebody owes you something that they said that maybe you deserve, it's time to let these things go. Why? Because it's holding you back. You're stewing on it. In some cases, you know, what I call, and I've talked about this in the past, where, you know, whenever crunch time happens, whenever we're put to the test, there are certain things that we may not struggle with. I tell people all the time, I'm the kind of person, I don't know what it is. I mean, I could give you a whole bunch of psychological reasons. I, generally speaking, have never been a person who struggles with theft or stealing. It's just not something. I'm not saying that I'm judging anybody who does. That's just not my thing, okay? But when it comes to anger, oh, yeah. And see, what happens is now's the time where my anger, I have to truly be on guard, because this is when Satan's going to work to try to get that anger to be directed internally, not just at my children or my wife and the people in my house, but also being angry with myself, not being willing. I can't move forward. What are the things that are those defaults, the things that we fall back on naturally, those things that our sinful nature is particularly prone to? What are those things? Because those are the areas where Satan is trying to come at us. And what we see here that Paul is addressing in this church, he's saying, let those things go. But most importantly, be aware that they're there and that this is a distraction. This is a distraction to keep you from making the progress that God wants to work on you in this time. A few questions as we close out here. And just a quick reminder that, as has often been said, plenty of people have said this, we'll get through this together. We're going to get through this. But it's important for us to understand that part of that together that's going to allow us to get through it is not just us being in close proximity physically and holding hands, but constantly being reminded that part of that togetherness is that I have a responsibility and a duty, and I have an obligation because of Christ and his sacrifice to be willing to show that love and show that example to those around me. Because that's what's going to bring us together. That's what's going to remind us that we're not alone. It's so tempting to feel alone and isolated during this time. The best way that we can show who Christ is by reminding people that I'm here for you. You can call me anytime. I'm always available. I'll do what I can. I thought it was great. I saw the lady. She was in the car. She was in the parking lot. And I went up to her, and she looked so happy. And she says, hi. And she's like yelling through the window. She's like, you know I can't open a window, right? She's like, it's great seeing you. I'm so happy. She's like, but you know I can't open a window, right? I was like, no, I get it. It's fine. And I'm like, okay. I'll just call you. See, here's the thing. She wasn't going to open that window. I don't know what the door was like. I didn't, like, check, you know. But I'm sure she wasn't going to open the door either. Like, we have to. There are certain people, because of underlying conditions, we have to keep our distance. But that doesn't stop you. That smile was genuine. It was sincere. I was actually happy to see her, and I know she was happy to see me. We can do that without being together physically. Are we committed to doing that? A few questions here on our focus. In what way has our new normal been a distraction for you spiritually? How has it caused you, on the other hand, to focus? In what way has this new normal caused new things to come up, either new things that are positive and allowing you to focus and see things and allowing you to grow, allowing you to see God more clearly? Or in what ways has this new normal of social distancing and some of the constraints that have been put on us financially and in business and in other ways, in what way has that distracted you? Because for a lot of people, this is one big distraction. This is one big just mess. It's been something that caused us more anxiety, more impatience, more doubt. But it's a mirage. It's a distraction. We have to understand that God is in control, and he's calling us to something. And in each person, it may be something totally different. Do not allow yourself to get distracted. What is distracting you right now? What do you need to go to God and say, help me with this distraction that is keeping me from focusing on what ultimately you have planned for my life? Are you an example of Christianity to others and the things that really matter versus the accessories and add-ons that come with it? I think about this because, especially because I used to sell cars. I thought about Leroy as I put this point in there, because a lot of times when you go and buy a car, you know, it's great when you can, you know, sell somebody on the leather seats. And they're like, well, I don't really need the leather seats. Oh, yeah, but, you know, they're heated, you know. Or I really need, you know, and I'm not accusing Leroy of this. I'm simply saying that there are times when the accessories and the add-ons and the upcharge, you know, you ever go in and you buy that, you know, I went in to buy my son a phone. I think I mentioned it some time back. I went in to buy a phone. It was one of those prepaid phones because I love my son, and he does good, but he's also 11. So I'm not going to buy him a $500 phone. I didn't buy myself a $500 phone, but I'm not going to buy him a $500 phone. So I go in, I buy him the phone, and I'm like, it was only like, I think, $50. And they're like, do you want to get the protection plan? And I said, absolutely not. They said, yeah, but are you sure, because if something happens? I said, listen, the last time I bought a protection plan, I wasted money, because I spent more time fighting to get you all to give me a new phone than I actually did. I ended up buying him a new phone anyway. That's how I got the phone. And then they're like, oh, okay, we've decided to go ahead and come through, and here's your money back. The thing about it is, some people get so caught up on the ancillary things and the add-ons and the accessories that we forget that those aren't the things that matter. When it comes to showing who Christ is, forgiveness matters a whole lot more than, you know, making sure that you say something polite, or, well, I can't shake hands. What am I going to do if I can't shake hands, or if I can't greet people? People don't greet with a holy kiss anyway, right? Well, I can't hug people. Well, I'm sorry that you can't hug people, but you can forgive them. But you can show kindness to them. You can serve them. I told you about the chicken and the two-mile-long road full of people down in Harrington. You know, it was interesting. I decided, you know what, these people clearly need this chicken more than I do. So I turned around. I came on back. You know what? Mark, he's like, you didn't get the chicken? I said, no, I didn't get the chicken. Mark got some chicken, found me, keeping social distance. He put the chicken in the van, and I was grateful. I ended up still getting some chicken. Mark cares about making sure that my family has chicken. Thank you, Mark. The point is, you can serve people even with social distancing. You can show kindness and love to people even with social distancing. You can do for people. Are we committed to doing that? Or are we so caught up on ways in which we used to do it? Some of the, as I said, accessories. Well, I'll do it when I see them on Sunday. Well, now that Sunday worship has been taken away from a social distancing standpoint, are you still committed to the fellowship and the breaking of bread and the prayer? That's so much of what we've been talking about on Wednesdays. Are we still committed to those things, even though some of those add-ons and accessories have been taken away? What idol in your life have you gone back to since the new normal has emerged? Are you more determined to rid yourself of sin right now, or have you been taken away by universal thinking? There's two parts I want to get into here. One of the things Paul referred to, notice when he was talking about sin and malice and grief and strife and anger and all these things, he points out that these are like idols. Because these are frankly the things that we pray for God. Yes, I know that Christ would require that I behave and function and exhibit in this way my life. But I actually bow at the altar of revenge. Or I bow at the altar of lust and sexual desires. I bow at the idol of whatever it is, even beyond knowing that I'm not supposed to live this way. He points out that those things are idols. Those are things that we serve when we say, I know that Christ died for me. I know that I'm forgiven. I know that I'm not a slave to it, but I'm going to voluntarily go back to it anyway. These are not requirements. These are not things we have to do. During this time of stress and uncertainty and anxiety, has this been a time where you have actually gone back to those idols? Have you put those things away? Have you gotten further away from your sinful nature and your sinful desires? Or have you actually gotten closer to them? Have they become more prevalent during these past 6 weeks or so? Or have they faded away and you've almost forgotten them? They almost don't exist. Are you more determined? You know, the other part of this, talking about that universal thinking, one of the things, and I won't go too far into this now, but one of the things we find is what was happening in this and so many other churches, and as he's referring to these people coming in with all these different ways of thinking and adding all these things to the gospel, these were people that were eventually known and became more prevalent as the church grew in the first century. They were Gnostics. People that were somehow taking away from the deity of Christ. People that were taking away and slowly chipping away at the gospel. If we're not careful, we can get into that way of thinking now. We can kind of get so far off into the science and, well, this is what Bill Gates said, and we're going to put our faith in this vaccine, or we're going to put our faith in, you know, the CDC or the World Health Organization, and we forget that science is not at odds with God at all. But science is not God. Science does not determine your faith. Science does not say, you know what, it's a certainty. I'm looking at people here. It's a certainty that three of you are not going to be here in a month. That's not how God works. And our faith has to get us to a place where we don't allow ourselves to be swayed away by universal, worldly, humanistic thinking. Understand that our lives are rooted in faith in God and God alone. And that God determines and works with the science. Why? Because God created the science. That doesn't mean that we don't need to have restrictions. That doesn't mean you don't need to wear the mask when you go in the food line today. You need to wear the mask. I'm looking at you. Wear the mask when you go in the food line. But that has nothing to do with where your faith lies. And be careful to not get swept away by universal, scientific, ungodly thinking that chips away at your faith. And finally, are you aware and on guard against people that have influence in your life but do not have in mind the things of God? So much of what Paul was telling these people was, be watchful and be mindful of the people in your life. When I say the people in your life, I'm not just talking about somebody who may be in your family or somebody you talk to all the time or somebody that you live with. Those may be the case. If you work with somebody and they're always chipping away at faith in God. But what about the people that you listen to? The talk shows, the YouTube, the TED Talks, the videos, the things that you are consuming. Are you conscious and aware of those things that may be actually chipping away at your faith? The danger, the most present danger that Paul wrote about to all of these churches was false doctrine and people, not people who were coming in and necessarily killing them. That was persecution and that existed, but that wasn't what the biggest danger for so many of them was. The biggest danger was getting swept away by thinking that wasn't thinking about faith. It was a thinking about humanistic things. And during this time, we need to be careful and on guard that we remember that we have faith in something that's bigger than science, because we have faith in the very thing it created, science itself.